Welcome back to another episode of the Students Beyond Borders podcast. I'm your host, Nicole, here again with my co-host, Amber. And today we have a very exciting guest, Julia Ratti. Julia is a USAC Spain alumna, former CEO of Girl Scouts of the Sierra Nevada, and former Nevada State Senator, just to name a few of her impressive credentials. We cover a lot of ground in this episode, from some of Julia's favorite study abroad memories to more hard-hitting topics like community health issues, women in leadership, and how international education can help create healthier communities. Ready? Let's get started in 3, 2, 1.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the Students Beyond Borders podcast. And welcome, USAC alum Julia Ratti. Julia, we're so glad that you're here.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm excited to do this.
Yay. Well, to start us off, we have several topics we want to dive into this episode, from your USAC study abroad in 1993 to your accomplished career path since your global education experience. And we'd also really love to take some time to discuss and celebrate women's empowerment, especially since you've been involved with several women's organizations and because of your new role related to community health, which I know we'll get to in just a minute. We thought it would be particularly poignant with the global pandemic to specifically highlight women in healthcare as well. So to get started, would you mind introducing yourself? Things like when and where you studied abroad, and maybe a few details about your recent career. I know you've held some pretty important community roles, and I just made a big career change recently.
Well, you bet. So my name is Julia Ratti, and I was lucky enough to be born and raised in Sparks, Nevada. So I'm a Nevada native. My dad grew up in Fallon, and my grandpa emigrated from Italy. I was the first person in my family to go to college, and it took me a little while to figure it out. So I had some fits and starts. I actually dropped out after my sophomore year trying to figure out what I was doing, and went fought wildland fires and worked at a ski resort for a season while I was figuring it out, and then came back. And as I was wrapping up my college career, I was still kind of looking for that adventure. And so I was able to go study abroad in the Basque Country, specifically in Donostia or San Sebastian. That experience was phenomenal. I chose that because one of my very closest friends in the world is Basque and was actively involved in all kinds of things promoting the Basque culture. She was a Basque dancer. Her family was heavily involved in the local Basque club and bringing forth the Basque monument in town. And so having been her friend, I had had the opportunity to participate in the diaspora that is the Basque culture. So it was really incredible to be able to go and spend that time in the Basque Country. Came back and fought fires for another season to build up my budget again, and then jumped into my career. And my career has been primarily about nonprofit management. So I started with Partners in Education, which was the precursor to the Education Collaborative. We helped the community get involved in the K-12 education system. And then I took on an executive director role with a small but mighty nonprofit that did gang prevention and intervention work with young individuals in our community. And I had my own business for 10 years doing consulting and contracting and work primarily with nonprofit and governmental agencies. And then I was lucky enough to become the CEO of the Girl Scouts locally and really work on raising the next generation of female leaders. Was also able to step up from that and work at the national level for the Girl Scouts, rolling out good programs and initiatives nationwide to help support, strengthen Girl Scout councils. And then latest step, so I kind of took some time because I had a couple other things going on in my life and did some consulting and some part-time work. In my latest step, I just accepted a position in July that is the director of programs and projects here at the Washoe County Health District. Public health has been kind of a through line to all of that work, whether it was, you know, strengthening the education system or trying to help kids stay out of or get out of gangs or empowering the next generation of women leaders. We know that so much of your health is actually determined less by your genetic code and more by your zip code. And we know that if we can do meaningful interventions and do things that help people to improve their housing, improve their education, improve their leadership skills, all of these things, that we get better health outcomes as well. 13 years ago, I also decided that I wanted to lean into public service. And so I ran for the Spark City Council, and then we spent 8 years on the Spark City Council. And then I spent 5 years as a state senator representing the Reno-Sparks area. And in that role, I chaired the Senate Health and Human Services Committee, and I was the assistant majority leader, so the number two person in the Nevada State Senate. And I just wrapped that up moving on in November of this year. So that's me. Well, except for that I'm married to the fabulous James Kavanaugh, and we have our wonder dog, Gus.
Thank you for sharing. That is quite the resume. You've been, I would say, a little busy in the last few years. We're so excited to have you, and we'll dive more into your professional life and your role with women empowerment and leadership in our community. But I wanted to take it back first to your time in San Sebastian with USAC. You chatted about why you chose San Sebastian, you know, your ties with your friends, family, and her culture. I think that's wonderful. What are some of your favorite memories from studying abroad in Spain? I'm sure there are many of them that you could go into, but are there any that always stand out when you're asked about your time abroad?
There was one particular night in a cidreria, so a cider house. So it was cider season. And so this was fermented apple cider. And we got to go to the cidreria with a group of my roommate's friends who were locals. She was a law student. And so part locals, part some Americans who are on the program. And when you come in, it's kind of like a barn-like atmosphere, and you come in and they hand you a glass and some silverware. And the meal is put out on this big plank board that the table legs are made out of barrels. Think like wine barrels. And every so often they would uncork a new barrel of cider, and they would say something, and I'm sorry, I cannot remember what they said, but they would yell this word, and everybody would take their cups and go running over to that fountain that's now coming out of that barrel and put their cup under that barrel so that they could get their cider and then go back and continue feasting and enjoying company. And I do think that in many cultures around the world, as I've traveled a bit more since that time, that gathering around food and beverages is certainly a big part of many cultures. So, you know, unlike my days today, where I often am just eating quickly so that I can move on to the next thing, that cherishing of mealtime and company and good quality, fresh food, that I think was one of my favorite all time. In addition to that, there were four of us who during spring break took a 3 week, maybe 2 week excursion all around Spain. And so four women. So we definitely all like wanted the girl power to go along with us. And we just got to see, Spain is just such a really cool and interesting country in that the regions are so distinct. You know, so you have the Basque region, of course, then you have the Catalan region around Barcelona. The southern region is very different. We also went into Portugal and saw parts of Portugal. Up in the northwest corner is very different. And so that trip was phenomenal. There's a town in the northernmost corner that is a pilgrimage site. I believe there's a specific saint that is buried in that particular area. And so it's this pilgrimage site. We did not know anything about that, but we ended up arriving there on some significant date and getting to see all of the festivities that were wrapping around that pilgrimage site. And I have a very distinct memory of this large incense burner swinging from the very top of the church inside, swinging like back and forth inside across the whole length of the church, with just these plumes of incense and all the celebrants and all the pilgrims having, you know, met their destination and all of the ceremonies that went along with that.
Thank you for sharing that. I think both of those memories probably resonate with a lot of our students, either the food and the gathering, like you said. I know those are some of my favorite memories when I studied abroad, but then also the happy accidents, like you just talked about, ending up at that pilgrimage site during a celebration time that you totally weren't planning on. I think that happens a lot with students when they're studying abroad, is, you know, they just, let's take a little trip, and then they stumble upon either, you know, an area of significance or a date of significance, some exciting cultural celebration. And to me, that's kind of what it's all about, right? Ending
Absolutely.
Up, you know, just totally surprising yourself. That sort of thing is definitely always an amazing story to tell.
Nicole, to build off of that. So another memory from that trip is we were in a small town in Portugal, and we had parked our car on the street over the evening, and, you know, we're bunking up in some hostel, and we came out the next morning and our car was gone. We didn't speak Portuguese, and Portuguese was different enough than Spanish that we were having some challenges communicating. So we were trying to ask what might have happened to our car, and finally figured out that they were running the bulls that day. And so they had towed our car so that it would be out of the way of the running of the bulls. And we ended up not being able to continue on to our destination because we couldn't get our car out until the next day anyway. And just being in the middle of this running of the bulls that went right by like the front door of our hostel. Okay, I guess this is what we're doing today.
That's kind of an okay, happy accident, maybe. Hopefully it wasn't too expensive to get your car back after being towed.
But free. We just couldn't have it back perfect. Until it was all done.
You just had to sit and wait, which, I mean, there were scenarios to find yourself in studying abroad, for sure. Jumping forward, so it's been many years since you've studied abroad. Plenty of time has gone by. You've really grown as a professional and as a person. What about your study abroad has stuck with you through all of those years? And what, either personally or professionally, what skills have you carried with you that you learned during study abroad?
That's a great question. I think, you know, so the way I did mine was at the very end of my studies, and I was a little lost about what I might be doing next. So it was kind of an opportunity to extend the educational experience and to not have to force that decision just yet. And then I came back and fought fire. So I like delayed that decision even a little bit more. I think the wonderful thing about travel, that was my first significant international travel experience, is you get a better sense of your significance in the world, or like an opportunity to raise some self-awareness about how big the world is and how small you are, which I mean to sound not in a way of not valuing your own importance, but understanding that maybe that decision that you are wrestling with over whether to take this job or that job in the overall scheme of things isn't maybe as big of a deal as you are thinking it is. It's important to you, but when you see how big the world is, how different all kinds of people live, certainly in Spain and in the Basque Country, my experience was like when you introduced yourself, you didn't even talk about your job. And oftentimes you could spend an entire day, entire evening with people and not even know what they did for a living. Whereas in America, we tend to be pretty focused on like the second question, oh, so what do you do? And their identity was so much deeper than their profession. And so I think having that experience and that knowledge right as I was contemplating my profession just gave perspective that I was always going to be more than what job I chose. Now, it's kind of a funny thing for me to say because then I became a bit of a workaholic and like really have leaned into work. It's something that I'm working on now that I'm 53 years old is to lean a little bit back from that space. But still, I think that that's something that stuck is that that sense of identity. I mean, part of the reason I've been easily able to move on from things since I am no longer a state senator, right? People keep asking me, oh, you know, is your ego bruised at all? Or do you have to go get that next title or that next, you know, name that you get to put next to your name? And I just don't have any concerns around that. I do think that a lot of that goes back to that time of traveling internationally, being in a country where at that time in that country where it wasn't all about what you do, like your identity is bigger than your profession. And then traveling since then and finding that really that's the way that most of the world, at least places that I've visited, approaches it. They're not quite as concerned about your title or what goes next to your name as who you are as a person. So I think that's something that I've really taken from that time, just a general appreciation. I've had such an amazingly blessed life in terms of getting to work with and be around people from all different walks of life and all different backgrounds. And I think that sort of thirst for that certainly comes from that time as well.
Thank you. I love both of those perspectives. Like you said, we put so much weight into your profession, into your title. What do you do is always the second question asked after, and what's your name? And so it's really nice to hear that you've taken that after all these years and allowed it to help you grow as a person and find what it sounds like are roles that you're really passionate about and get fulfillment from, as opposed to climbing the ladder and focus on just getting that next promotion, getting that next pay bump, becoming the top dog at any company you work at. You can really find passion projects and allow your job to fill part of your bucket, but not maybe your whole bucket or only one of your buckets.
My question for every change that I've made, and I make a change about every 4 years, I have an intention span of about 4 to 5 years, but the question is always, can I make a difference here? Can I make an impact? And if I can make an impact, then it's probably a good match.
I love it. I think that's a great thing to hold on to. And as well as the diversity side of things that you mentioned from your study abroad and your travels, it's really common that students study abroad. I know I experienced it as well and came home with a hunger to work with a wide group of people and expand your horizon and meet more people and work with different cultures and still stay diversifying their knowledge and the people they work with and the backgrounds that they interact with. I think that's great.
Absolutely. And I think too, the question, can I make an impact, really segues perfectly into our next question around female leadership. And so with the positions that you've held in your career, Julia, it's very clear to me that you've been a significant public servant and leader. We just talked about it, right? Firefighter, community gang prevention, Girl Scout, city council member, state senator, and now working with the health district. So I may be projecting a bit here, but I think these roles take just a certain amount of confidence, collaboration, and drive to be successful, right? Would you say that your study abroad experience helped contribute to these qualities? Or would you say maybe you've just always been more of a natural leader, right? So just always looking to make an impact, as you said.
That's a great question. My mother would tell you that I was always bossy. I was always directive. So I was happy to tell other people what to do, which is not the definition of leadership. I mean, I'm joking a little bit. She tells a story about, she had an in-home daycare when I was little, and I was the littlest one. Everybody else was a couple years older than me. And yet she would come out into the backyard and I would be organizing this game, or we would be all playing school and I'd be the teacher or whatever, because I liked to help other people figure out what we were going to do. Right. I think that to a certain degree, that comes naturally, that pulling everybody together and saying, okay, let's go do this or let's do this. I think those broadening experiences. So then do you do that because of some selfish reason, or do you do that to serve your own needs, or do you do that to serve the broader needs of the world? Like, all of those broadening experiences are really meaningful and significant. I was always the person who was rooting for the underdog. I've now been a vegetarian for 25 years. It started with learning about lamb and how lamb was raised. And then as like a 13-year-old, 14-year-old. And then as later in my teen years, I learned about industrial chicken farming and I'm like, well, that's just not right. And if that's not right, then I can't do it, right? So stop eating lamb, stop eating chicken. Eventually got to the place where I just didn't eat any meat. So I think that there's always been a little bit of that in there as well. But again, those broadening experiences of understanding how a decision that you make like that works on a neighborhood level and a city level and a state level and a global level. And so to have that experience relatively early on of understanding that decisions that we make on a personal basis have a global impact, I think is incredibly important. And, you know, when you're working to make the world a better place, either as a nonprofit executive or working in public health at a government agency now, or serving as an elected official, really being able to understand how to think global but work local is an important skill. And so I do think that a lot of that was influenced by my time abroad.
Julia, I feel like you're setting all of my questions up perfectly here. So I wanted to take us a little bit more into your public service space. We know that women make up around 30% of all state legislators nationwide. So I'm wondering if you can talk just a little bit about women's leadership at the legislative level, but then also how can global education, studying abroad, potentially help bridge that gap?
So it was so much fun. In my first session in the Nevada legislature, we became the first state legislature in the nation to have a majority of female legislators. First in the nation, Nevada. Who'd have thunk it would be Nevada? And now, three sessions later, we are still the first and only legislature in the nation to have a majority of female legislature. And yes, absolutely, I think it matters. Representation matters. You certainly see coming out of the Nevada legislature more bills that deal with things like making sure that there's a safe, comfortable place in a workplace to breastfeed, or issues around childcare and leave, or we passed the ERA and we were the first state to get that ball rolling again. And now there are enough states that have passed it that in theory it could become a constitutional amendment. There's some fight over whether or not the gap in time from when it got started many decades ago to when we finished it recently is constitutionally legitimate. But, you know, when you have a majority of female legislators, you're going to have conversations around equity, equality, diversity. And so I do think that that's been incredibly important, and how fun for me to be in the legislature when that happened and have the opportunity to serve so many women from across the state from across the political spectrum and all kinds of backgrounds and experiences as well. So it wasn't just that there's a majority of women, but we have people of color, we have LGBTQ representation. The state of Nevada actually is one of the more diverse legislatures in the nation. And you see it in the legislation that comes out in the state of Nevada. I cherish my 7 years with the Girl Scouts, building girls of courage, confidence, and character who will make the world a better place. Because what that forces you to do, you get a title of CEO of Girl Scouts, and you're charged with raising the next generation of women leaders, you're probably going to pay a lot more attention to how you're leading. You are the role model's role model. I think it just made me more conscientious about making sure that how I led was a good example for myself, that I felt good about it, that I could sleep well at night, that I never had any questions, that I led with integrity and courage and confidence and care, because I wanted to model that for my staff. I wanted to role model that for the volunteers, and I wanted to role model that for the girls. And so those are some pretty amazing opportunities I've had to like have that experience in a organization dedicated to developing the future generation of leaders, and then be part of this body of current generation that has an opportunity to make a difference. It's pretty cool.
I love that you bring up equity, equality, diversity, such incredible pieces to focus on here in our conversation, in our communities, globally, locally. Thank you for your comments on that. And sort of rolling into that just a bit more and tying it back in with study abroad students. So what would you say to any student who may be more shy or reserved, or who may be a bit hesitant about studying abroad? What can going abroad do for their confidence, their independence, et cetera?
Well, I think the first thing that people should know about me is that I'm an introvert. And folks don't always get that because of practice and training. But I define the term introvert as somebody who gets more energy by themselves time and somebody who expends energy when they're with others. And an extrovert being the other way, you get your energy from being around people, and you need that when you're by yourself. It takes more energy. Putting yourself out there to travel may feel like it's very risky, but my experience was doing it through something like USAC, where you're on a program with a number of other people, is that it's a very supported environment. And you can create the space that you want to create, meaning that if you're more comfortable initially spending more time with other Americans, you are there with other Americans, and you can figure out how many hours a day you want to spend in a place where you're in more of your comfort zone, because you're hanging out with folks who you're more similar to. If you really want to put yourself out there, you have lots of opportunities to engage and embed yourself in a new culture and be a little bit more out of your comfort zone. So getting over there is the first and important step, but just knowing that you're part of a system that has your back, that if you stumble, somebody's there to catch you for the most part, but then you also can put yourself more out there on a limb, and really you can kind of dial that up or dial that down based on your own comfort level.
I love that, sort of really leaning into your resources, yeah. Especially if your comfort level is not exactly there. And I think we say this in every podcast, right, Nicole? Like, studying abroad is where you start to get comfortable with being uncomfortable, mm-hmm. like a lot.
Yeah, everything you were mentioning, Julia, is pretty much exactly how I approach my study abroad, because I'm introverted as well, but also less so now as I've grown up, but used to be very, very shy. And so I did exactly that. I leaned on the resources that study abroad provided me. I use it as an opportunity to slowly tiptoe out of my comfort zone, but still have resources to lean back on with my American friends who spoke English, or staff members that I knew were there to support me, and that was their main role. And so that's a really great point to make, and a great way to direct students that might be hesitant or scared to study abroad, because exactly what Julia said, USAC especially, you know, we're here for you, and we know the struggles, and we have resources in line to help you out.
Yeah. And then I think the other thing that's really important is the time commitment. So when you immerse yourself for a semester or even a year, you might be uncomfortable the first week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks, but the longer you're there, the more comfortable you get. And just that just allows you then to keep continually spread your wings and spread your wings and spread your wings, as opposed to like traveling to a country for a week or even 2 weeks. And when you really live there for 4 months or a year, depending on the program that you're doing, you get acclimated. And that way you can keep pushing yourself a little bit farther and a little bit farther and a little bit farther. And I think that's where real confidence comes from, is that practice and being able to do it for over an extended period of time.
So moving forward, a central theme this year is celebrating women's critical contributions to our communities locally, but also across the country. Providing healing and promoting hope is kind of the slogan, which is both a tribute to the ceaseless work of caregivers and frontline workers during the ongoing pandemic, which still is a very real thing, and the recognition of thousands of ways that women of all cultures have provided healing and hope throughout history. We cannot think of a more important tribute right now to women healthcare professionals, of course, with the pandemic and everything that's been going on for the last couple of years. And because the field of international education was obviously so heavily impacted by the pandemic, these things kind of go hand in hand for us. We here as a study abroad provider know the impact of the pandemic, obviously in a different way than healthcare workers, but we can feel their struggle for sure. How, in your mind, will some of your global skill sets, things that you learned during study abroad, things that you carried on through your many careers and international experiences help you in your new role at the health district? Or have the skills you've learned during your international travels helped you in other roles?
I think the first thing that travel teaches you is flexibility and adaptability, right? You may have a version in your head of how a trip is going to go. And if you're lucky, it doesn't go completely the way that you had planned it or anticipated it, because sometimes it is those surprise moments, those unplanned moments that are so enlightening or just wonderful memories. But I think that that adaptability, that flexibility, that getting out of your comfort zone is incredibly important. And those are certainly attributes or skills that have been essential in all of the work that I have done. I think also valuing diverse perspectives is really important, figuring out that the answer that you have isn't always the best answer, and there are lots of different ways to solve a problem, would be another part that I would say has just been critically important to my ability that I've had to be successful in all of the different roles that I've played. That has been important. Surround yourself with good, smart, capable people, and then listen to their ideas. And then really would like to end on, with the pandemic in particular, we have had tremendous challenges in our nation and in many other places across the world, but I'll just focus on home, around inequality, issues around equity, and systemic issues. So not just personal racism per se, but when we're talking about systemic racism, we're talking about systemic poverty, we're talking about, again, that concept that your zip code will be more of a determinant of your health than your genetic code will. And what the pandemic has done is shown a very bright light on that. These things existed prior to the pandemic, but experiencing a pandemic, you just can't ignore that some of us have more privilege than others, that the healthcare system is set up to serve some parts of our community better than it is to serve other parts of our community, that those social determinants of health, like do I live two or three people in a 2,000 square foot house, or do I live 10 people in a 1,200 square foot house, has a direct impact on your health. Do I have to go to a job every day at the grocery store where I'm going to interact with people, or am I a knowledge worker who can work hybrid from home, is going to impact your health. All of these, again, what we call in the field of public health, social determinants of health, are really critical and important. And so I think for me, leaning into the public health space, how much longer we're just going to be okay with the fact that there are tremendous health disparities in our community that need to be addressed, and that they can be addressed partially through service, like doing a better job of making sure that programs and services are available. But they also have to be addressed by really tackling some of the systemic structures that affect a person's ability to be healthy. And so we're lifting up some work here at the health district to start to build out a more holistic and systemic approach to help more opportunities for health equity, more direct attacks on health disparities, so that every human being should have the opportunity for good health. And that's certainly foundational from having relatively early in my life had the opportunity to see a part of the world that was different than me, and then continue in roles at Partners in Education and Gang Alternatives Partnership, where I had opportunities to work with people who were different than me and continue that work forward now, today. Wish we had made more progress in the last 30 years that I've been working full-time. Just doubling down. It's time that we continue as an individual, the organization that I work for, our community working together. There's lots and lots of opportunities to do better.
Thank you for all of that. I agree with everything you've said. The pandemic definitely has shined a light on all sorts of different issues, from community health to systemic racism, all of those things that you mentioned. And so it's great to hear that. Of course, the health district, like you said, is obviously working to drive community health and wellness, and the things that you mentioned that you guys are doing and working towards, leaning on cultural empathy and consideration to keep all ranges of communities safe, right? Like you said, it's your zip code plays such a big factor in it. There's no one size fits all solution to community health, right? And, you know, we've learned that now more than ever, like you're saying. So it's really great to hear that you're still leaning on your study abroad knowledge and the experience you've had exploring other cultures, learning with other people, learning from other people, and understanding that there's no one right or wrong way to do things, and that everybody sees problems a little bit differently. That being said, I know your answer is going to be yes, but do you think that more students could benefit from study abroad as it relates to healthy communities here at home in the U.S.?
Absolutely, yes. And my big hope for the work that we should all be doing together is to make sure that there's access to study abroad for students from all different income levels. When I was doing it, I don't know how much of ability there was to do it if you didn't have some financial wherewithal. And so I think that would be a thing that would be important to me, is that we should be working collectively to make sure that your income level isn't determining if you get that experience.
I'm so glad that you mentioned that, Julia. So to our students who are listening to this podcast right now, certainly go to the usac.edu website into our Money Matters section. You'll find all of the different scholarships that are available to you, both internal through USAC, and also we link to several external scholarship opportunities to make sure that if funding is a barrier, which we know that continues to be the number one barrier to studying abroad, we just want to make sure that you are aware of all of the support that is available to you that you can apply for, including one of our newer scholarships, which is the Access, Equity, and Inclusion Scholarship. So thank you so much, Julia, for bringing that up. I'm hoping I can take just a minute to plug a few of our courses. So we've covered so much in this episode, but I do think we would be remiss if we didn't share just a few ways for students seeking to pursue health and wellness education abroad with USAC, if we didn't go over just a few of those opportunities. Because honestly, there's a giant myth out there that, for example, nursing students can't study abroad because of the time commitment, which simply isn't true. We have fabulous advisors who can help work through keeping you on track to graduation on time, making sure that you're hitting all of your courses that you need for graduation, those types of things. But to add to that, there's another giant myth that you can only study health and wellness abroad if you're on the track to becoming a doctor or a scientist. So when we're talking about health and wellness studies with USAC, we're really talking everything from pre-med and biological health to sports health to community health, global health, healthy societies. We also have internships available to students, which we know is incredibly important. Just to give you a couple quick samples, we've had a few students work with the Italy Red Cross or the health department in Costa Rica. And so those opportunities are both in person and online. So no matter how you're able to participate in global education, whether it's just from your computer at home, it looks really fantastic for you to be working with diverse communities. Even if you can't leave, you know, the comfort of your home, that's okay. So we just want to make sure that we're meeting students where they're at.
And Amber, if I could just add on that, I think sometimes when we think health, so often people do think medical professionals. And so as somebody who's worked in public health and is currently working in public health, I would just encourage students to, you do not have to be the person who provides hands-on care to be a healthcare professional. And there's just so many opportunities in public health. So just as an example, here at the health district, we have environmental health specialists who are working on air quality or water quality. We have the more like inspector level folks in environmental health who are making sure that your restaurants are safe and your pools are safe, and you're so scientists from kind of that background. We have epidemiologists, people who love the data and that side of it, or love studying chronic diseases and are working in that space. We have health educators who not only work on helping individuals understand how to be advocates for their own health, but also work on systems change. So they're working on policies like, say, the Indoor Clean Air Act to help not have the negative benefits of tobacco smoke. So there's so many ways to engage in health. If that's an interest to you of wanting to help make our community healthier, safer, help protect people's health, but you don't really want to be a provider, I would encourage you to explore public health as an option.
I think that's such a great plug. Thank you for adding that in there. It's true. There are so many ways that you can be involved in health on so many different levels. Like you said, not just being the one to provide hands-on care, but there are thousands upon thousands of other opportunities out there to still get involved in the industry and, you know, the health and wellness space. Absolutely. And like Amber said, USAC can help get you there.
And I should just say I have a photography degree with a journalism minor.
Perfect.
And here I am in public.
Kids, it all works out.
Julia, thank you again for being here with us today. We've covered so much, right? Your time in San Sebastian, women's leadership, how leadership isn't just a position at the top, right? You can lead from the front as long as you're making a difference in your community. And health and wellness courses, is there anything else you'd like to add?
I can't recommend it enough. If you're on the fence about considering study abroad or engaging with international programs in any way, shape, or form, do it. It's going to make your life more interesting. I guarantee you'll learn from it, and I guarantee you'll cherish those memories when you get to be more tenured like I am.
Thanks so much for being here with us today. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Julia. Right.
Thanks for including me.
Thanks for listening to the Students Beyond Borders podcast. If you have questions about USAC study abroad or would like to suggest an episode topic, email us at studyabroad@usac.edu. You can also send us a DM on Facebook, Instagram, or TikTok at studyabroadusac. To explore program offerings, scholarships, and more, visit our website at usac.edu.